I want to talk to you about an accident that you had. It was during session in 1997, I believe in March, when you were heading home, correct?
Right.
And so tell us what happened.
Out of the east came a Mack truck across the broad expanse of Lincoln Boulevard. I had not seen him coming, but then all of a sudden he was crossing my lane, and I put on the brakes. There were a number of cars, but there was no lane to avoid the Mack truck in.
This is an 18-wheeler, right?
Yeah, an 18-wheeler, right. I should have said.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and so I just went right up under the Mack truck, and that was the last I knew. I mean, when I woke up, there were the jaws of life and people asking me what year it was and who our governor was and what the name of the day was. Did I know where I was? Which state? What's my name?
Did you do you remember yourself going under the truck?
Yes,
so
I remember. I remember thinking, this is it. There's no way to avoid this. There's no way to stop from sliding under this truck. And there I went.
So you come true then.
So I come to, who knows how much later. All I know is when I got to the hospital, all I wanted to do was sleep. And they kept waking me up and not letting me sleep. And I'll just never forget that feeling. Sleep was so tempting. Delicious. I was driven to sleep. And so that was a test of wills with the hospital staff that lasted for a day or two.
And obviously the automobile is totally wrecked. Do you know, did the truck come over you? I mean, you were trapped in your driver's side.
Yeah, I was wedged
airbags,
in the door.
Airbags, I suppose, mm-hmm. come on and all that kind
oh,
of
yeah.
thing. Oh, yeah. Right. So what are the injuries to you?
I just think it's my head. I think they were to my head. It's good to have an excuse. You can blame a concussion on that loses you your memory, but, you know, I haven't totally lost it. But things will come back. It's like rebuilding a memory for 20 years.
Oh, so that's true. You really have had to. You're done rebuilding now, but
I don't know if I'm done. I mean, there are things that I forget every day, and then there are things that come back to me every day. So it's an odd dance.
But early on, a year or so after the accident, there was very definitely things that you were missing.
Later, it took me. I think it took a few years to realize it.
Oh, and you didn't know it.
I didn't know it immediately. And maybe it happened over time, but there definitely was that displacement in the brain. I was conked out for a long time.
You mean
unconscious
under the truck?
Mm-hmm.
So you, hours or how long? You don't know.
I'd have to go back to the court case because you know the insurance company sued over it and et cetera. My car was totaled, et cetera.
The driver was held.
Mm-hmm.
Responsible for
yes.
this, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did he ever come around and talk to you?
No. No, and I think he may not have even been that legal a driver.
Okay.
I know there was a problem with the trucking company, and I think it may have been not a reputable trucking company.
How long were you in the hospital before?
Just a few days.
You mean there were no other injuries other than to your head?
No.
Broken bones? Nothing.
No.
Nothing. So it was all
formal.
A major concussion.
Yeah.
When you hear concussions today, we hear more about that with athletes today.
Isn't it something
you, what they're... You now know for sure what they're going through.
Yeah.
All right. So how long did it take you to start coming around and going back to session and working?
I would say a week. I mean, I was in University Hospital for a few days and then came home, recovered for a few days, went back into session. I didn't think anything much about it at the time. But then looking back on it, I started having memory problems. And fortunately, had great staff to work with. So if I forgot something, we could all look it up. We could all go back to the record.
Did you seek medical advice on this? Doctor, I'm missing something here?
No. No, because it wasn't profound for a few years. And then I began to read about the brain, research that was current, and thinking, you know, this sounds familiar, especially in the 21st century when we were reading about all of these concussions and the brain damage done.
Did any of your colleagues say?
They were either incredibly polite and gentlemanly, or they just, you know, they didn't notice anything. They just thought I was always that way.
But there were those who noticed something, you think?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I know I noticed something I couldn't remember things I'd actively been involved in. Hmm. And but it all, you know, it start they started coming back, memories of the past.
So you must have said to yourself, wow, I could have been killed.
Oh, yeah.
I could have lost my life. There must be a purpose for me here on this earth.
I better do something fast.
Did all those
Not fast enough.
And I know all those thoughts went through your head, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I did. And I left the legislature feeling, well, I tried. And I was always pushing, but I never got done what I thought was most important to do. In fact, I think the closest we came to ever doing something strong as a state was the education reform bill when Henry Bellman was governor and Steve Lewis and Bob Collison chaired House and Senate. And they, I mean, that was an incredible threesome. Mm-hmm. They had the leadership to finally pass this education reform bill and put in place a real reform effort. And then when it was objected to by private citizens, two or three filed a petition against it. And so we had to fight the battle all over again. This time we fought to keep it. We did a vote no campaign and prevailed. And I think it may be the only state that's had a public vote on tax monies spent to invest in children's future and their success. As far as I know, no other state has done this. So it's a pretty proud claim for 1990, which is the year it passed in.
Right.
And I think of everything I did at the legislature, that was as close as I ever got, just being part of that larger vision, part of that larger tough effort to what I had dreamed about being possible.
So the citizens finally did. The citizens voted, right.
They made
the right decision.
So it wasn't like, you know, I think I said to you before, I thought the University Center at Tulsa, which is now OSU, was our most important act. But in a way, you can look down the long road and say, well, that was inevitable. It was too outrageous that we didn't have publicly supported higher education in Tulsa,
right.
So that was going to happen. This education reform was not going to happen but for the efforts of these PTA people and supporters of education, and not directly the teachers or the administrators as much as the outside forces, the community forces, the chambers of commerce, the individuals, the people who cared about the progress of the state and wanted to see it go somewhere and wanted to see us competitive with other states and be internationally connected and conversant. It was great. It was a great time. But, of course, there was dissent.
Of course, right.
But it was, I think, looking back on it all, it was the high point for coming closest to being part of something really significant.
Yeah, well, you were close to and part of a lot of good, significant things. But then there was another accident that took place,
right.
And this was a fire.
This was something that woke me up in the slowest of ways. And it was in February of 2000. I had come back across the turnpike for a Chamber of Commerce meeting on education. And we were meeting in this auditorium. I think it was in Jenks. I had come home to bed and just crashed after a hard week. I remember being really tired, crashed to sleep. I just remember my two cats. They were there nearby. The dog was not. And about 2 a.m, I woke up and I heard this clash of like a garbage can lid being crashed down on top of a garbage can. You know that sound?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, how strange. And then I finally got up, and I could smell this really wonderful scent of wood burning, and you know, that makes you feel so comfortable and want to go right back to sleep. But I thought, but this is strange that I'm hearing this clatter. And I picked up the phone to see if I could call 911, because when I heard the clatter, I thought I saw someone down below in my neighbor's yard, and I called 911. Well, the phone was dead. The phone line was dead. So that woke me up. And then I thought, either this line has been cut or something's going on. And then I saw these nice flames sort of lapping up through the causeway from the garage to the house. The fire had started in the garage.
Yes, and I know you've told me this before, that there was an electric heater in the bedroom over the garage, and the thermostat became stuck, which caused the heater to implode, and it became the actual cause of the fire. So tell me, then, did anyone else nearby see the flames?
The youngest boy next door on the other side had seen the flames and woke up his mother and father, and they said, you know, go back to sleep, it's nothing. And he said, no, it's something. He was about 2 years old. And so finally, the neighborhood woke up and the trucks came and whatnot, but not until I tried to open the door of my bedroom to go down the stairwell, and there was about 1,000-degree heat in there. So I couldn't go out that way, and I kept saying, all right, it's a house fire. There's got to be adrenaline somewhere to get me to open these windows. But no adrenaline came. And so I finally opened this little teeny square that was in the middle of the other windows. This is an old house, and there was this little square patch in the middle. And I finally got that open and squeezed. And I'm overweight. And, you know, squeezing through that thing, my children could not believe I could get through that. But anyway, I did, and I jumped out of the second story and landed on some pots and broke feet and ankles.
Okay. You just so jumped out of the second story. We need to come back.
I scrambled.
As soon as you got through that opening, what, were you standing on a deck or something?
No, there was just the window and a laurel tree that was growing there.
It was down,
laurel bush.
Bingo, out of that window, and it was down right away.
Right, and I had just stacked the pots there earlier on a warm day, but this was February and frigid.
Okay,
there were these pots.
You came through the window. Could you stand up?
No.
So you just had to fall out of the window?
Yeah. Yeah, and I did. I fell out of the window and sort of grabbed for the tree going down. And it was bad having the pots there, because I broke the pots, and so the pots broke my ankle and my heel, my foot. Smithereens, you know, pot fragments. So anyway, that was that.
So when you started going through that window, you knew what you were doing. You knew you're jumping, you're getting out of here.
Oh, yeah.
I
was bailing
out.
That was
your commitment. Right. So, okay, so before you went in the window, was there a lot of thought to that or thinking about
it?
Yeah.
I thought, how am I going to get out of here?
Right.
I mean, I just thought.
But you were nervous about jumping down the floor?
I was worried. I was nervous about getting the windows open. I could not get the windows
open. So that you couldn't jump. That's what your biggest worry was about.
Yeah, that I was.
You were already committed to jumping. You just,
Yeah, but I couldn't find out how to get out.
So the injuries you just described, your leg, your ankle?
On my left side.
And so those were the only, not to belittle
the lungs, any, but the lungs kept me in the hospital. The lungs were really damaged. And I had breathing tubes for a while and oxygen. So then the foot became more noticeable, and I had surgery on the foot. And I remember seeing people I knew in the emergency room corridor waiting for someone, you know, to come take care of me. Well, I would walk into a constituent, or a constituent would walk by. Oh, hi. Susan Savage came in with the chief of police, and she was there at 3 in the morning. She was mayor, and she was there in her sparkling blue jeans and sparkling smile. That's the only thing I remember is, and then I would conk out. But it was quite a weird, prolonged stay in the hospital.
Because of your lungs?
Mm-hmm, because of the lungs. And
the lungs because of smoke or the way you fell? Or why were
No, it was smoke.
Okay.
It was lung damage. And so I've been a little short of breath ever since. But I've lived to tell about these things. And I am just so fortunate to be alive. I'm so fortunate to have had the friends there who got me to the hospital and got me through this. And
so these two accidents, did they give you, first of all, the first one, was there a period of fear of driving for a while when you started driving again?
No.
Okay. And what about then your fear of fire, thinking that this could happen again in some house or wherever you're living? Did that haunt you?
No, but I could really understand every time I picked up the newspapers, reading about how people could sleep through a fire, how they could not escape, how they could not get out. Those stories became so understandable.
Yeah. Well, here you were saved twice.
Yes.
And so...
Oh, gosh, John. You're saying what for?
No.
I'm a grandmother.
You still had work to do, because these are in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, this was my election year. 2000 was my last election, my last campaign. So it did affect the campaign.
How?
Well, my opponent attacked me for not knocking on doors.
While you were in the hospital?
When I was in a cast. No, after session. And it was just an ugly session. And
who was your opponent?
I lost a really good friend. I'm not even thinking of his name right this second.
Okay. And you lost a good friend.
I lost a good friend, and I was visiting her a lot of the time out in western Oklahoma, even though she worked in Tulsa and for Tulsa. Her mother lived on a ranch out in western Oklahoma, and so I kind of considered that my western Oklahoma home, and she died of diabetes, and then I was in the hospital with all this absurd stuff. It was just crazy.
It was
a sad year.
What was her name?
Cheryl. She used to be Cheryl Benson, and she was Cheryl Selman.
Okay.
And you knew her.
Yeah.
You knew Cheryl.
Right.
She was an extraordinary friend, an extraordinary person, an extraordinary friend to education.
Yes.
She was a big part of the education reform bill, she cared about children, helping children really be successful. She was a student-focused advocate of education. That more than anything, more than any organization within education. You know, just she was for the students.
Well, you come from strong stock, don't you? You've got
amazing
a resilience there.
I've just been amazingly lucky because I've certainly squandered any genetic heritage I got from my grandmother and my mother. Late in the 90s.
You drew on all that through these two incidents, for sure. You know you did that.
Yeah.
And then you went on and did some other great things. So the work didn't come to an end. So thank you for sharing that part of your life, and that these things can be overcome. It just, I'm sure there were dark days.
With a lot of help from a lot of friends.
And a lot of dark days for you, too. But you were able to withstand all that, and here you are sitting vibrant.
I would hardly use that adjective. But that's not a nice note to end on. You're a very great interviewer. Thank you so much.